The Anton Savage Show
with Kearys.ie
on News Talk.
There is a line from Arthur C. Clarke, the science fiction, the late science fiction writer that I have always liked, which is that any technology sufficiently far advanced is effectively indistinguishable from magic. And in the last 30 years, I think you could argue that is what has happened in terms of eye surgery, that the advancements, if you said them to people 40 years ago, 50 years ago, they would have regarded it as magic. One of the people doing that magic is Arthur Cummins, who is ophthalmologist with the Wellington Eye Clinic. Am I right in that, Arthur? Has it been that significant a change?
It has been, Anton. You know, 30 years ago, it was being done with a blade, manually with a blade. And then 30 years ago, a very bright PhD from the UK started applying what they were using in chip technology to etch the chips, eczema laser. He said, I wonder if this would work to reshape the cornea. And they started the trials and it looked very promising. And the first procedures were done maybe 35 years ago. LASIK sort of in 92. I started in 94. So it's 30 years this year. So it's been revolutionary. It's, you know, each little pulse of the laser is 0.25 microns. So the precision is phenomenal. And when you ask the laser to do something, it does exactly what you ask her to do. And why you sometimes see a small variation is just the way people heal differently. But it's got super accuracy today.
And it was interesting, in the break you were telling me that that thing of the shifting of technology from one area to another is what gave us the very first eye surgery, the intraocular lens.
Yes, you're right. So this was a crazy story. This year is the 75th anniversary of the IOL, the intraocular lens. So back, you know, 5,000 years ago, the Egyptians were doing surgery. They would just poke a needle into your eye and the lens in your eye would fall back, the cataract would fall back and it would be clear again, except you weren't focused, but at least you could see. So
the Egyptians did that?
Yeah. So 75 years ago, there was a British ophthalmologist who noticed that pilots from the Second World War, many had lost their eyesight. But some would come in with shrapnels of glass, pieces of glass, perspex inside the eye. And he noticed that the eye had no reaction. And he thought, I wonder if I couldn't make a lens implant from the same material. Because up until then, if you had a cataract operation, you ended up wearing very, very thick glasses. And these glasses were basically doing the job of your lens that you didn't have inside the eye anymore. And he started doing it. But he was ostracized for 30 years. He was a persona non grata. He had to do it in a different hospital. He worked at Moorfields and he had to go and do the surgery at St. Thomas's when he initially started doing it. And 35 years later, he was finally knighted. In the last 5 years, I think there's something like 100 million lenses have been implanted. 100 million lens implants in the last 5 years. So that's really changed life for people who have cataracts and you're replacing the lenses, or for people who just want to see better. And their best choice happens to be a lens replacement.
Now, walk me through the types of conditions that are now commonly fixed by surgery that once wouldn't have. Cataract, I assume, is the prime, is it?
So cataract is the most common operation in the world, 34 million procedures a year. So that now is a really high success rate. Our biggest challenge normally is to remind people that it's surgery and it's not without risk. But you have to go a long way to find someone who doesn't like the effect of the cataract surgery. And then short-sightedness, myopia, long-sightedness, hyperopia, and astigmatism can all be effectively treated with today with laser vision correction, with lens implants, with lens addition, so implantable contact lenses and lens replacements. And then we're moving into an era now of addition technology. So instead of using the laser for certain situations to reshape the cornea, you can actually add tissue. And the tissue you're adding is corneal tissue. So donors who donate the corneas for, you know, when they pass away and they donate their organs, those corneas are typically used for corneal transplants. But every now and then, they're not suitable for a transplant. But part of the cornea is suitable for an inlay. So that's becoming more popular. And people really like the idea of, I've noticed it a lot in our clinic. You know, we see 1 or 2% of the population who love the idea of owning their vision and seeing permanently instead of sort of renting it through glasses. And we've been biased in thinking they love it so much because it's permanent. But it turns out those who don't come in exactly because it's permanent. So they're afraid that if you get a result that I'm not happy with, I'm sort of stuck with a permanent problem. So the whole space of reversibility is really making people interested. So the two most reversible procedures would be one called an ICL, implantable contact lens. You add the lens, and if the person for whatever reason doesn't like it, you take it out and you're back to where you started. And the same thing with adding corneal tissue. If it's corneal tissue, corneal stroma, you add the corneal tissue, and for the person that doesn't like it, you remove it, and you're back to where you started. So that's quite nice.
What if things like scarring? Does the eye scar like normal tissue if you open it up?
It does, but there are lots of ways you can work around dealing with that. So inside the eye, you don't really see scarring at all, and you can certainly manage it. In the cornea, you do, but with the modern techniques and technologies, you don't. It's very, very uncommon.
And what then about the rejection of transplanted tissue? Because my understanding was that the eye has an interesting relationship with the immune system.
You've absolutely right. So the main reason it does, one of the main reasons the cornea is clear, so the cornea is the window in front, and one of the main reasons it's clear is there's no blood supply. So it gets all of its nutrients and oxygen and so forth from the tear film and from the aqueous inside the eye. So there's no blood supply. And for your immune system to reject something, it needs to have contact with your blood supply. So that's one of the reasons it's so safe. So corneas that reject, which is not common anymore, but it happens, would be when vessels from the host cornea, your cornea, starts growing into the donor cornea, and then you might get rejection.
And for something like the implantable contact lens, what is the lens actually made of? That isn't a biological tissue. That is a plastic or something.
Fascinating question. So there may be 7 companies in the world making those at the moment. And most of them, 6 of them, use artificial materials. But there's one company, the one that has the market share, the lion's share of the market. And theirs is made of what they call a polymer or a collamer, which is partly collagen, porcine collagen, so a very small amount of pig collagen. But pig material we use all the time, you know, with big heart valves and insulin and polymer. So those two together form this lens. So it's very well tolerated. There's just no reaction inside the eye, nothing.
Do you still, when you are doing surgery, do you take pause on how significant the surgery is? Because I think it's one of those things where people, when they think about, I'm going in to get a procedure, whatever about getting a knee done where there's a lot of hammers and it's way down there, the eye is very intimate and very personal and very precious.
Yeah, we do. You know, I've had it myself. I've had LASIK myself. So I'm very aware of what it's like for a patient. And I've done a lot of procedures, but I never lose, for that person, it's their first procedure, and the odd person might have it a second time down the road, you know, an adjustment. Because they just didn't respond the way we anticipated they would. So we're very aware of that. And it's especially in this space that's totally performance-based. So if you think about cataract surgery is you're treating pathology. And medicine's basically about treating pathology. This area of medicine is all about performance. So the surgery is just, it's a given. It's got to go perfectly well. What you're doing is trying to give someone who's got a good alternative with glasses or contact lenses the ability to see just as well, if not better, without those prosthetic aids. So it's a performance space.
Do you tune each eye differently?
It depends on what you're trying to target. So you can sometimes. You can sometimes have one eye for the older person. You can have someone where you're correcting the one eye for distance vision, the other eye for reading. And then, so the camera, the two eyes of the cameras, they are fine-tuned for the task you've given them. But all the processing happens in the brain, the back of your brain. So that's a brain thing. Some people do very, very well with that. Others don't do quite as well.
So does that mean then that if you tune one short and one long, the brain combines the input from both and just gives you a general picture?
That's exactly right. So first of all, the first few weeks, there's a little bit of conflict with the brain sort of struggling. Then you go through a phase we call neutral. So for 6 months, it's just getting better and better and better. But if someone says, hey, you don't wear glasses anymore, what happened? You'd say, well, I had my right eye fixed for distance, my left eye for near. But further out, you don't know anymore. I had it done 12, 13 years ago. I can't tell you which eye is seeing the sign over here. You know, you've got to check to see which one's doing it. So the brain is so plastic. That's probably the thing that for me has been the biggest eye-opener, forgive the pun, in the last while, is the brain's plasticity. So we always tell people with a lazy eye, which is just where the one eye's got a 5G connection to the brain, other eye's got a dial-up connection to the brain. Nothing wrong with the eye, but it's just a dial-up connection. And we've said there's nothing you could do. If only you came in before you were 7 and we would have patched the one eye. Now, today, there's digital treatments where you can bring that up to speed. A few requirements you've got to meet. It doesn't work for every case. But can you imagine? You can teach the brain to see again and use that eye again.
Well, I remember reading a thing about, I don't know what the purpose of the research was, but where they did this thing where they give you glasses that mirror the world so you see everything upside down. And that after a period of weeks, the brain just says, okay, fine, and flips it for you so that you can see normally.
Absolutely. It's bizarre. I read a book once where they showed in rats where you could put the optic nerve and transplant it into the oral part of your brain, the hearing part, and vice versa. And within 6 weeks, you're seeing with your hearing part of the brain and you're listening with your visual part of the brain.
So does it mean, therefore, that anybody who uses corrective lenses of any form could have surgical intervention to do the same thing? Or is there a limit to what the surgery can deliver?
So it's true for probably 98% of people. There's one part that I still find really heartbreaking. We said young people who are very long-sighted, so plus 8, plus 9, plus 10, and they at the moment we don't have...
Sorry, remind me, long-sighted means you can see things far away or can't?
Someone who's so long-sighted can't see anywhere. Everything's a blur. But if you're long-sighted, typically you see better far than you do up close. But it's not an age-related thing. This is from a young age. So for those young people, there's a solution that'll work perfectly every time, and that's a lens replacement. But we tend not to replace lenses for young people. We sort of want to see much closer to 40 before we start replacing lenses for long-sightedness. And many of these young people could get the ICL, but the problem with the ICL is you need a certain amount of space inside the eye. So if there's not enough space, you can't put the lens in. So that's the one group we sort of let down for now.
What about the age of people that you take in as patients? Because I was talking to somebody a while ago about hip implantation, and they were saying that one of the issues that is always a challenge is whatever material you put in, you have a different density between the implant and the bone, and that causes almost literally friction. So you're better to hold off for as long as you can, and if you're younger, you're likely to need a second go. Is the same true with eyes, or can you take somebody in at 25 and say, good luck, enjoy the rest of your life?
So that's what happens for most, but there's still a normal aging of the eye. So your own lens changes. So your own lens inside the eye that eventually becomes a cataract is very fascinating. It's got the same origins as skin and nails and hair, which means it never stops growing. So as your lens grows, the first thing that happens, it becomes less elastic. And typically, almost like clockwork, between 42 and 45, you find you can't read anymore. And so that's when you need help reading. And then eventually, if you live long enough or it happens sooner for you, you line up with a cataract. The lens becomes opaque. So for most people, when you have surgery as a young person, and you know the big pandemic before COVID was in fact the increasing prevalence of myopia. And the one thing that puts the brakes on myopia is correcting the vision permanently. That really puts the brakes on and slows things down. And then age-wise, on the other side, the far side of the spectrum, there's nothing that stops you doing anything you want. So mostly them, you start going towards the lens. I had an 89-year-old patient the other day who chose for her lens implant a multifocal lens implant. She's 89. She's out of glasses for the first time in like 50 years. She doesn't have glasses or anything, not for far, not for near. It's brilliant. It's very liberating.
Unsurprisingly, we're inundated with questions. Let me just give you a couple of quick ones because time is against us. Can you donate your corneas if you've had cataract surgery?
If you've had cataract surgery, yes, you can.
Another, my 46-year-old son has sight in one eye that is badly short-sighted. He wears day and night contact lenses. Are there any procedures suitable for that?
I'm not sure exactly what it entails, but it's certainly worth looking at today. There's procedures today for almost anything regarding myopia, short-sightedness.
I took part in a trial with Arthur for tissue in one eye. I was back after 4 years for follow-up tests and my eyesight is still amazing. No glasses needed and I just turned 60. Any suggestions for a person with a significant eye sensitivity to light and to brightness?
If someone's got that and it's a new thing for them, you've got to make sure they don't have inflammation inside the eye. So there's a condition called uveitis or iritis from the iris. And so that's if it's a new thing, that must be checked out. They need to have that checked out.
As we now stand finally, Arthur, what do you think is the next coming revolution? What's the next wave that you as a surgeon or doctor are looking for saying, okay, 10 years from now, 15 years from now, hopefully we'll be able to do X?
There's a fascinating project that I'm an advisor to based out of Israel that has a Botox model of vision correction. And what you do is you go in for this little laser that's just in the skin, just in the epithelium. So it's, and it makes small little holes into the epithelium. The epithelium is 50 microns thick, just thinner than a hair in a certain pattern. And if they look at on the device and say, yeah, this is nicely centered, it looks good, you then for a couple of days put drops in the eye. These drops are nano drops. They drop down into these little holes. They then close up and the effect seems to last for 4 or 5 months. And so you do it when you like. So it eventually wears off and you do it as you like. So a Botox kind of a model. And again, for people who are afraid of the permanence of a procedure, there's a nice solution there. Yeah, it doesn't stop. It's brilliant.
Tech saying, what is the name of the man speaking about eye surgery, please? The man's name is Dr. Arthur Cummings. He is ophthalmologist with the Wellington Eye Clinic. Arthur, thank you so much.
Thank you.
The Anton Savage Show
with Kieries.ie on News Talk.